that will replace the very deficient ones currently there. Phase four would be a parking structure, and five, finishing the development with the new administrative building and the fueling wash stations. And of course, I think one of the attributes of this plan that's so great is that we've actually made provisions for future expansion as well, beyond what we can envision right now, which includes adding a third deck to the parking structure and additional warehouse space.
I had a couple questions.
Yes.
One had to do with geothermal. Are you talking about tapping into the geothermal, possible geothermal sources there?
It's a possibility. We can run tubing through the ground and basically utilizing the 55-degree temperature of the ground as a form of geothermal. We haven't investigated enough to know if there's additional heat source or perhaps other geothermal attributes to the site, but it's certainly a form of heating that we would want to investigate further.
Good. The second question had to do with, I noticed one of the slides said that the old structures and grounds were not ADA accessible, but you didn't say in the new one whether they were or not.
Could you? Absolutely, they will be ADA accessible, okay. 100%. And one thing I didn't mention in terms of older structures, there are a couple historic buildings on site, and we're saving the historic headhouse structure, which is associated with the greenhouse, and that will be relocated in part of the greenhouse structure and very much much more visible and a part available as a community resource.
Good morning. I'm Karen Trappin, and I would like to thank the council for their support of this work and their commitment to the men and women who are daily taking care of our extensive park system. The condition of the Mount Tabor yard has come up many times over the years. This is the first time that the staff at the yard actually have hope that a real solution will address working conditions. Portland Parks and Recreation has prioritized taking care of the parks and buildings used by the public while neglecting the yard. Now we are coming to terms with the impacts of deferring maintenance to our yard. We must fix the yard in order to respond to the demands of our growing park system. Mount Tabor Yard has operated with plastic tarps for roofs and walls, repairing mowers outside in the rain, and a carpenter shop with a ceiling too low to rotate a 4x8 sheet of plywood. That's like me trying to work out of my basement. Some work units have materials stored in several different areas, creating inefficiencies. This is a problem we cannot continue to ignore. Portland Parks and Recreation staff have worked in partnership with the community to develop a modern, sensible, and flexible solution for the yard that will serve the city for the next 50 to 100 years. We wanted to bring you a good plan, and we've done that. What we are proposing will have to happen sooner or later. Waiting will increase costs and result in continued inefficiencies and safety issues and may expose the city to liabilities in the future. We are presenting you with the best opportunity to solve a problem that cannot be ignored. We are asking you to support the committee's work on this project. We need to take care of the people that are taking care of everybody else. Please support the vision and blueprint for the Mount Tabor Yard Nursery and Long Block. Thank you.
Thank you very much, folks. Is that all the invited testimony? You know, I think it may be important prior to the testimony actually taking place is to explain the ordinance 1727 and the management of the property. A lot of folks aren't familiar with that background in terms of the property ownership and then the management of it.
Commissioners, Mayor, a portion of the southern area of Mount Tabor Yard is owned by the city, obviously, was paid by the ratepayers for water. And it was in a piece of property that was part of the a reservoir that was on that site many, many years ago. But for many, many years, I think it's maybe 30 to 50 years, that portion of the site has been used by parks. And there are other areas within Mount Tabor Park, nearly 50 acres, that are part of the reservoirs, the three reservoirs that are there, and are managed by Water Bureau. So we have been in discussions with Water Bureau to clarify, first of all, the ownership. And we've been there, and we know who paid for what. And now what this ordinance does is clarifies the management responsibilities. And what we have worked out with Water Bureau, that this 1.8 acres mm-hmm. will remain in terms of management with Parks Bureau. And do you want to add anything else?
That covers it.
Yeah, I think there were some folks in the community who thought that that may be a pretext for eventually selling the property. Could you just address that issue?
The agreement between Water Bureau and us?
This has nothing to do with this. This is a long-term commitment to this property.
This is a long-term commitment to this property. And as this plan shows, we actually need that piece of property to provide access from South, from Division, to the park. And as well as a portion of it would be occupied by future maintenance facilities within the park.
Can I add one point, too? Yes. In the process that we went through, there was a lot of confusion about ownership issues. And so we thought this was important just to settle those once and for all. And we were advised that that could be accomplished by council action, that the city's the owner of the property. All property that's city-owned belongs to the city as a whole. But that the source of funds to purchase it is significant, and that management authority can be assigned by council.
Does that address your question?
That answered my question, yes. Thank you, folks. How many folks do we have signed to testify?
We have 10 people signed.
Let's call the first three.
We have Jeff Tryrens.
Sue, is your microphone?
You know, I don't have a mic today.
Okay.
Laura Price and Nancy Norby. They'll be followed by Leslie Pohl, Cosbo, Don Smallman, and Greg Snyder.
My name is Jeff. Okay.
Excuse me, please go ahead, folks. It was regarding another issue. So please state your name and you speak. You each have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. My name is Jeff Tryant. I am here to speak about the plan that you saw this morning that you heard about. I am on the planning group as a member of the Parks Board. So my job was to make sure that as the planning group did its work, that it kept a system-wide view about the way we were doing the work, and also that we maintained a view for the whole city. I am happy to report to you that the Parks Board voted at its meeting earlier, last month, that it unanimously supports the plan as it came out of the planning group. And we are quite pleased with the fact that it does maintain that broad view of the needs of the city over the long term. This has been I've been doing this work for probably 20 years involving planning with community, and I've probably never been through a more complex planning process than the one that we're just wrapping up now. It is an excellent plan, and I hope the council will be able to support it in full. I would also like to say that while everybody did their job and everybody was dedicated, that there is one person that I would like to say as well who did an extraordinary job, which is Maya Spencer. Really, she got handed a really tough job in the middle of the process, and she handled it in a very calm and even-handed and hardworking way. So I would just like to commend her for that work.
Thank you.
Hi, Commissioners and Mayor. I'm Nancy Norby, and I live in the Mount Tabor neighborhood. I'm an officer of the Neighborhood Association, along with being the chair of the Friends of Mount Tabor Park next month. I also steward the off-leash area. I am the only member of the planning group that was also on the original Mount Tabor Master Plan. So as you can see, I'm an active volunteer. My focus has always been Mount Tabor Park and anything to do with the dogs. The Friends of Mount Tabor Park were given a presentation of the plan at a foot patrol meeting in October. There was a lot of interest and really no objections. I had made sure that they were informed of the public meetings and any way they could participate. All in all, they support the plan. As I said, I also steward the off-leash area for the park, and it seems to me that this plan will make it easier for people and their dogs to get to the area, both from Division and along Lincoln, because right now it's a little dangerous to come up from Division. This plan in no way changes the area. One of the things that you accepting the report will do is make the off-leash area a sanctioned area of the park. It has been open for 5 years with few, if any, problems. Warner Pacific is directly south of the area, and they like having the dogs there. They think, and I agree, that it cuts down on vandalism for them. It is among the most visited areas of the park. So I would like to close by thanking everyone that participated in the process, once again, especially Maya Spencer. And I'd like to thank Zeri Zantner for following through on her promise to engage the community and have a thorough discussion about the yard. I was at every meeting and on many of the subcommittees, and it was a huge time commitment. But I think we came out with a workable plan that, most of all, upgrades the working conditions and the safety for the park employees and anyone else that goes to the yard, which was our first charge. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Laura Price, and I live in the Mount Tabor neighborhood and was also a member of the Mount Tabor Planning Group. As a landscape architect with a background in historic landscape preservation and a 20-year career in park and open space planning, I want to voice my strong support for this plan that honors and invests in the 100-year legacy of the maintenance yard and nursery for the future. In particular, I want to speak to the open space portions of the proposed design for the long block and upper slope beyond the yard proper. I believe the architectural team has elegantly responded to Olmsted's historic vision in providing a future vision for this tremendous city asset. First, by preserving all of the functions of the maintenance yard and nursery at this site, while also managing to preserve the green space of the long block and upper slopes. Secondly, by strengthening the public entrances to the park from both 60th and Division Street. And finally, by continuing the horticultural legacy of this land by expanding the public use benefits with the inclusion of the community gardens and usable community open space. I believe the proximity of the community gardens in this design in relation to the public greens, covered shelter, nursery, administrative offices in the park create a value-added benefit of possibilities for future educational and community program and partnerships. I strongly support the inclusion of the community gardens in the long blocks, which were overwhelmingly supported by the broader community at the community open houses. The gardens will provide much-needed garden space in this part of the city. There is currently nearly a backlog of 1,000 gardeners on the waiting list for garden plots. With such a backlog of demand and such a challenge to secure lands and develop new gardens in the city, the long blocks seem an especially appropriate resource to use for this purpose. In response to some arguments that the gardens do not fit Olmsted's vision, I would argue that they, in fact, represent what Olmsted stood for at his core. As the father of landscape architecture and designer of New York Central Park, he was driven by a desire to improve the social condition for all walks of society by creating places for shared community and natural settings to, quote, restore the hearts and minds of urban dwellers. The community gardens exemplify these principles. There's also precedence. The Boston's Emerald Necklace has the oldest and largest community gardens in the country that were first built as Victory Gardens in 1942. The inclusion of the community garden, open greens, interpretive shelter in this redesign of the nursery long blocks and slopes is a fitting and appropriate response to the changing needs and sustainability goals of the city today. These features enhance public use of this public land and provide a framework that will support future visions, program opportunities, especially around food, health, and livability.
Thank you, folks.
Next will be Leslie Pohl-Cosbaugh, Don Smallman, Greg Snyder. They'll be followed by Catherine Natsu, Scott Yelton, and Catherine Murren.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Leslie Pohl-Cosbaugh. Good morning. I'm a member of the planning group and an employee of Parks and Recreation. Good morning, commissioners and Mayor Potter. I serve Portland Parks and Recreation in the Community Gardens Program with our office located at Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery. Gardeners and volunteers and other visitors come to our office at Mount Tabor site on a regular basis. The central location of 64th and Division is ideal for our program and as a central point from which to support and to maintain our 32 community garden sites throughout the city. Community Gardens has been based out of Mount Tabor Yard since 1975 when it first started, and staff works with our colleagues, the carpenters, heavy equipment operators, welders, and horticulturalists to build and to maintain our neighborhood gardens. These parks employees have had to patch and make do with poor and insufficient facilities for many, many years. And the current condition, as you know, of the yard and its configuration is a serious problem for staff and for our visitors, and it needs correction beyond simple repairs. I've worked at the Mount Tabor Maintenance Yard for over 30 years and served as a horticulturalist and a botanic specialist and a supervisor. And curiously enough, in the 1950s, I lived right across the street from this yard in my grandmother's house. And little did I know that I would spend most of my working years at Mount Tabor Yard, right across the street. The condition of the buildings by 1975 when I started was poor, and today the facility is very dilapidated. But a good thing, the community gardens program is housed in a small shed and barn, but it leaks air and water, and it lacks sufficient heating and cooling. The whole maintenance yard has deteriorated over the years, and it does need replacement. A new energy-efficient facility could offer parks and recreation sturdy structures, meeting places, offices, and better tool storage. Community Gardens program staff and volunteers currently must rotate in and out of our three cramped desks located at one workstation in one small room. We have to travel one block to load and unload our tools up and down stairs. And our children's gardening program has no place to store materials, snacks, and our equipment sits outside under tarps. Dust blows into the office through the boards, leaving a layer of dirt on our computers and papers. This is a common condition for all of the 100-plus employees who work at Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery. So you can imagine how excited I was to find out that a committee of Mount Tabor leaders and park staff was forming to address this condition and possible rebuilding of the Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery. I joined the group and volunteered time to do the problem solving to arrive at a solution that will work for everyone. And I'm grateful to have had this opportunity to participate and to be a part of this planning group and various working committees to gather information to help OPSIS architects to shape new design that will prove to be safer, cleaner, and more efficient over the years for workers and for neighbors and for our visitors. Park staff and neighbors have worked hard to find a good solution. I urge you to help make this a once-in-a-century commitment to our parks operations staff, Mount Tabor neighbors, and the City of Portland. Please accept the Mount Tabor Yard and Nursery Port resolution and ordinance. And thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dawn Smallman. I'm a member of the planning group. I'm also a member of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association and a homeowner in the neighborhood. I wanted to thank City Council and Parks Bureau for the opportunity to speak about our plan we're presenting to you today. A year ago, we undertook a new process that would combine community involvement and public policy. Our mission had two goals: ensuring a valued piece of Mount Tabor Park remained parkland and developing a detailed plan that would provide improved work facilities for the park's employees who maintain all of our wonderful parks. Our group did massive in-depth study to assess current and future workspace needs. Our plan includes consolidating some Park Bureau operations to be located at the central site, helping them run more efficiently. Our plan excludes consolidation options that would have had a negative impact on the nearby neighborhood. Striking a balance between Parks Bureau needs and community livability was always our guide. We made informed decisions about horticulture operations, maintenance operations, transportation impacts, historic and zoning issues, sustainability features, and architectural opportunities in this recommended plan. We educated the public about the maintenance yard, its importance to our entire park system. In turn, we asked for public input about the site redesign at numerous community outreach events. We researched, consulted experts, and gathered past documentations and studies about this parcel of land and its usage. These documents, along with new documents resulting from our process, are included in our updated Mount Tabor Master Plan. After reviewing the applications of numerous architecture firms, we selected Opsis Architecture because of their design aesthetic, commitment to sustainable building, and support of our public involvement process. Thank you, Opsis, for your many contributions to this project. We approach this opportunity as unique and look for ways to optimize redesign of the space by including community input, such as adding a much-needed Southern Park entryway for pedestrians and cyclists. We look for ways to strengthen parks departments that exist on-site, such as the addition of an educational community garden, which gives Community Gardens Office a nearby demonstration site. None of these conclusions came easy or without moments of great difficulty. I'm sure that all the members of the planning group, whether they were park staff, yard workers, or community members, often found meetings difficult. I wanted to offer a special thanks to our mediation team, JLA Associates, and especially to Jamie Damon in particular for getting us through the tougher moments together as a group. I want to thank the planning group, all the members who continue to attend meetings, all of you kept your view on the long-term goals. Your commitment proves that public policymakers and community members can come together, work together, and accomplish together. Our proposal comes at a challenging economic time. In the past, the city has set other priorities ahead of fixing the facilities at the maintenance yard. The need for improvements there is well documented and well known. All of the work, discoveries, and conclusions made by our planning group are now before you. A year ago, council asked us for a serious commitment. Our group now asks that back of council. Please work in favor of funding improvements to the maintenance yard and place it as the top priority in the upcoming Parks Bureau budget. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Good morning. My name is Greg Snyder. I'm a member of the planning group. I'm a resident of Mount Tabor neighborhood and a member of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. Today, I'd like to comment on the role that community involvement played in the success of the process that resulted in the resolution and plans before you today. For several decades, the deteriorating conditions of the Mount Tabor Yard were problems that, for whatever reason, were not solvable. As the needs for parks' proper maintenance continued to grow, working conditions and the structural integrity of buildings continued to decline. These problems eventually culminated in a decision to close or move the yard and sell the property it sits on. At this point, the community became involved and partnered with parks and their employees to attempt to save the yard and to improve the working conditions there. The result of that year-long plus collaboration is before you today. I'd like to emphasize that the solutions for the improvement of the Mount Tabor Yard and the working conditions of its employees would not have been attainable had not community members, parks administration, and yard staff joined forces. At times, the process was a difficult one as the community and government bureaus learned to communicate with and understand each other's viewpoints, concerns, and ideas. I think it speaks very highly of the process and those who participated in it that in the end, the selected architectural plan, the drafted resolution, and the updated master plan presented today were approved by an overwhelming majority of the planning group. Thousands of unpaid hours were donated by all involved. It would be difficult to place a monetary value on this donated labor, but I think it would be safe to say that in the end, the city of Portland got a great value for the dollars spent. I want to thank Portland Parks and Recreation and the staff at the Yard for their participation and perseverance in this project. I also want to thank Opsis for their hard work and abilities to create a creative and workable plan from the numerous voices that gave their input and opinions, and I'd like to thank City Council for approving the go-ahead and funding for this project. Personally, I came away from the process with a positive outlook and belief that when citizens and their local government work together, great results that make for a better city for everyone are attainable. I hope the success of this collaboration encourages more partnering between citizens of Portland and their government. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next three will be Catherine Knotson, Scott Yelton, Kathleen Murren, and they'll be followed by Kimberly Randolph and Lon Holston.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Catherine Knotson. I'm a resident of South Tabor and also a member of the Mount Tabor Yard and Central Facilities Planning Committee. In addition to being a member of also of the Transportation Subcommittee, I also did some historical research on the site on my own through the Historical Society, the Taxation Assessment Office, as well as the City Archives. Mount Tabor Park was annexed to the city in June 4th, 1906, and at that particular point in time, it was part of within the boundary of the city. The Mount Tabor Park Central Facilities Yard was developed during the administration of Charles Paul Kaiser, who served as a superintendent of parks from 1917 to 1949. The first superintendent of this yard was John Peter Hefty, who actually resided on site from 1922 to 1944. But as I looked at the building permit history, it began in 1928, and most of the buildings there were built after that point in time. There are three historic buildings on site. One of them is the head house. The second is the community gardens building that Leslie Polk Housebowl works out of, which I understand was a horse barn for Portland Police Bureau Horse Patrol at one point. And the third is the 1938 building, which is now used as an administration building. Those are the three historic sites. As far as the 1.8 acres that the Water Bureau owns, I went and did some research on that. I went to the City Water Committee records and found the transcript for the original deed, which the Water Committee had purchased the property for the Reservoir 2 site, in addition to some extra yard from Levi and Zipporah White. We did get a portion of that deed from the Water Bureau, but not the entire deed. So I went to the record at the City Archives to find the entire deed. Secondly, I discovered that there is, to the west of Southeast 64th Avenue, there used to be a building that was called the South Mount Tabor School. This building was constructed in 1886, and it maintained a school function there at least until 1914 or thereafter, and then at that point, Franklin Primary was built, or Hoffman School was built, and the school children were transferred to those buildings. The Water Bureau purchased this building in November of 1922, and I found the deed for that. So that will explain the history behind the Water Bureau property. But basically, the remaining 1.8 acres is part of the old pipe storage yard associated with the Mount Tabor Reservoir Number 2. In addition to that, I will briefly say that Southeast 64th Avenue was a vision of the 1996 South Tabor Master Plan, which was part of the Outer Southeast Community Plan, which included one of 10 plans, South Tabor's being one of them. And the 64th Avenue access point would be appropriate to finalize that vision for our desire to have access to the Mount Tabor Park. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
My name is Scott Yelton. I'm a resident of the Richmond neighborhood, former resident of the Mount Tabor neighborhood, and then former neighbor of the South Tabor neighborhood, as well as the president of the South Tabor Neighborhood Association. Currently a member of the planning group and also a part of the original mediation team. And if that wasn't enough on my plate, I just finished my master's degree at Portland State. And my thesis project was studying this collaborative agreement between the community members and Portland Parks and Recreation and the city. And you can actually read the details at 3degrees.wordpress.com. Just a little push for me. I sell advertising too, so that's where you all go.
Did you get your master's through the College of Urban and Public Affairs?
It actually wasn't. It was in sustainable education. So really, and what I did is what I studied in this group, the three E's of sustainability, what this process does for the environment, what it does for the economy, and what it does for equity. I highlighted equity because I think we've done an outstanding job of meeting with different people with different perspectives. Again, the details at 3degrees.wordpress.com. But if I could wrap it up in a nutshell, and 3degrees does not do that, so please take your own time. 3degrees.wordpress.com.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we were actually wondering as you were speaking whether you had a website that you could share with us.
Right now, and here we are.
Put it on the city's website. Put the link.
But in a nutshell, I would echo everything that's been said here by the community members. I think it was an amazing process. It was a grueling process. We have dotted our I's and crossed our T's. We've done a lot of hard work, a lot of hours. I think this adds a lot to the equity. We're hearing perspectives that really weren't heard before. We weren't felt that were heard before. And I think from the South Tabor perspective, we are getting some connectivity to Mount Tabor that is really tough to get. I know I've traveled to Mount Tabor several times. It's a lot easier from the Mount Tabor neighborhoods and the Richmond neighborhoods. Division is a busy street, and to bike up there is not an easy way. And I think this, like I said, it dots a lot of I's and crosses a lot of T's, and I'm really proud of the effort we put in today. And thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Good morning, commissioners and mayor. I am Kathleen Murren. I am a zone manager with the City Nature Department of Portland Parks and Recreation. And I'm here to highlight one of the benefits of this plan, which is to bring many parts of this department, City Nature, together in one location. City Nature was created in 2004 to integrate the stewardship of all aspects of the green infrastructure in Portland Parks and Recreation. And so it brought together a diverse group of units and divisions, including horticultural services, urban forestry, environmental education, and natural areas and trails. Currently, we have 9 reporting sites, which, as you can imagine, presents a lot of challenges to efficiency and effectively delivering good and consistent services. One of the benefits of bringing together City Nature, and one of the potential benefits, was to break down silos amongst the groups and integrate more fully these interrelated aspects of natural areas, trails, environmental education, trees. And that benefit has occurred to some degree, but with the numerous reporting sites, it's been difficult. With this project, most parts of City Nature will be brought together in one location. This will increase efficiency. We will walk our talk with fuel savings instead of going to multiple locations to meet. Will be more sustainable and will improve our service delivery. As designed, this location also includes classrooms and it's got right there the living lab of Mount Tabor Park itself. And so not only will we be able to improve our care of our own care, our staff care of our natural areas and trails, but we will also be better able, through having these classrooms and through the proximity of Mount Tabor, to pass on our love of nature and our stewardship to the next generation of ecologists and tree climbers and horticulturists and gardeners through our environmental education programming that will occur at that site. And so we're really looking forward to that.
Good morning. My name is Kimberly Randolph, and I am a member of the Planning Committee. and have been a horticulturist for Portland Parks for a little over 24 years. I've been located at Mount Tabor Greenhouse and Nursery at Horticultural Services for all of that time, primarily as greenhouse manager and now as lead horticulturist. I had been working at the Oregon Zoo at the time I was hired, which had brand new crew quarters for staff and equipment, which included a lunchroom, men and women's restrooms, and locker rooms with showers. To say the least, it was a bit of a shock to see the condition of crew quarters at Mount Tabor Yard. But I had confidence that Portland Parks would take care of that relatively soon. 24 years later, conditions at Horticultural Services have continued to deteriorate. There is inadequate office space and workspace for 13 permanent employees and 4 to 6 seasonal workers. In a space the size of a cubicle in Parks offices downtown, we have 3 computer stations. Our heating system for the offices is radiant heat from the boiler, which heats the greenhouse. Too hot in spring and fall, too cold in winter. The building has little or no insulation. It was 55 degrees as I sat at my desk on Monday, and actually at the last 2 days as well, even with a space heater at my feet. The plan being presented today would greatly improve the working conditions at Horticultural Services. Adequate office space, as well as being able to maintain connections with other city nature crews and other crews in the yard, will increase our efficiency. Particularly important is how the long block is addressed in the plan. Not only will it maintain the traditional use as an in-ground tree nursery, but will provide a more formal entrance to Mount Tabor Park, envisioned in the Olmsted Plan. It is very exciting to see how the plan addresses stormwater runoff, containment, and reuse. Horticultural Services has been very involved with BES projects throughout the city, both growing plant material and installing Green Street sites. Employees at Mount Tabor Central Yard have been working in dismal conditions for far too long. With this plan, we can define how the yard can serve Portland Park's system for generations, as well as enhance the public's access to one of Portland's oldest and most revered parks. I ask for your support for better working conditions for our yard employees. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name's Lon Holston for the record. I represent Laborers 483 here in town, and we represent a good portion of those hardworking folks you have up there at Mount Tabor Yard and throughout parks here at the City of Portland. When I was first asked to speak here for Richard Beadle, he's not here today, and I apologize for that. He's in Washington, D.C. I sat down and got to thinking about this whole process. Originally, I sat down and put together a whole dissertation on the history of the park system here in the City of Portland. Then I was informed I only had 3 minutes. So with that, I have some written testimony from Richard, and I won't bother reading it. I'll kind of summarize some of the things that he has said in that testimony. The labor organization that we have and we represent fully supports the Mount Tabor Master Plan. We support the 34 members and the rest of folks that sat down and went through this entire process during the last year to bring this report to you today. We felt that it was a very open public process and that we certainly enjoyed our participation in it and was able to help in any way that we could or was asked to help. So we fully support the report. We also support the resolution that would continue the funding for developing the construction documents needed to fulfill that report. We felt that funding this was very, very important when we talk about the economic crisis that we're in today. And I don't think that there's anybody here in the room that doesn't recognize that there is a crisis out there. And this project is almost a shovel-ready project as of this point. And it can be a shovel-ready project with your commitment in making and having this process move forward. We also support the ordinance that would separate ownership of the Mount Tabor Yard. We believe that that's an integral part of the process and that we also would like to see the Water Bureau held whole. We understand that there is a long history up there with a lot of parties and a lot of interests up there, and we support the ordinance to clarify ownership. when we talk about the city of Portland and the hard work that the folks do up there, we see it as a real vision and commitment for the quality of life here at the city of Portland. The parks are a regular green jewel, so to speak, in the crown of the city of Portland, and that we see that in order to be able to maintain that jewel, that we need to have a centralized place where these folks can meet, organize, and set out the workflow for the day and for the future for this city. So with that, Laborers Local 483 supports not only the report, the resolution, and the ordinance. And if there's anything we can do to help you, we'd certainly appreciate having you come forward and ask us, and we'll do everything we possibly can. So with that, I'm here to answer any questions that you may have. And if not, I will get you the answers to those questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is anyone here in the audience who wishes to address these specific issues? Then we need a motion. Actually, read item 1725. Need a motion and a second to accept.
Motion.
Second. Please call the vote.
Well, Mayor, I'd like to begin by just stating publicly how proud I am and honored I am to have learned recently that I will have the chance to lead the Portland Parks and Rec Bureau going forward, and I'll also be the housing commissioner. I think it's the first time in modern history that someone has had housing and parks, but I think they go together very nicely. I'm sorry Dan is not here, because I would like to acknowledge Commissioner Saltzman's leadership of the Bureau. And I note that a number of people who have testified today have acknowledged his role in bringing us to this point, and I think that's appropriate. I will just say personally, for me, it feels like Christmas and Hanukkah came early. And I have often thought of what it would be like to be the commissioner in charge of this great Bureau. And it will be a reality as of January 1st. And I want to say to Zeri and her team that I'm really excited about this challenge. And I know that we have some difficult budget times ahead and many challenges. But I believe we have a terrific team at the Bureau, and it's an honor to be selected as your new leader. Second point I want to make is about process. I have now become accustomed, I think, as Commissioner Leonard and the mayor have, in that we have had a series now over the past few months of public reports of this kind, where people, citizens, have come forward and said we've been engaged in a process that was very meaningful and inclusive, and our voices were heard. I keep thinking that the bar keeps being raised, but and at some point maybe we'll reach a point where the ceiling doesn't go any higher. But I've been enormously impressed at the really conscientious effort made by our bureaus to engage the public. And I think this is yet another example. And, you know, I wasn't here when this thing got slightly off track, but that's old news. Today we're celebrating the fact that we re-engaged the community and we came up with a plan that I think we can celebrate. And so I want to compliment the members of the Community Advisory Committee, as well as the staff who've worked so hard to bring this vision forward. On the specifics of what has been shown to us, and I've had the benefit of a briefing in my office as well as this briefing, I have to say that I not only am incredibly impressed with the design, and compliment OPSIS and the team that worked with all the stakeholders to get to this point, but I think it's visionary. And I'm delighted that one of the people who came and testified today took us back on a history lesson, because it's very important. And I can't tell you how many times in our deliberations the name Olmsted comes up. You know, and this is like 100 years later, we're still talking about what Olmsted thought about and predicted for our community. Most recently, before this debate, Olmsted was invoked in connection with Colwood Park in the Cully Concordia area. And Olmsted, one of the Olmsted brothers 100 years ago, had a vision, and here we are today continuing to discuss. And it's interesting how the Olmsted brothers have shaped the great park systems throughout our country in major metropolitan areas. And I've lived in Boston, and I've lived in Washington, D.C., and I've lived in New York City, and now Portland. and the Olmsteds have shaped each of those cities for the better. A word to the employees, and I'm delighted that our friends from the Laborers Union were here, and I know Richard Beadle's in Washington making the case for as big a stimulus package as possible, and we wish him well. But to the employees of our bureau, I want to first say thank you for all the work that you do, but please also know that we understand that you're working in deplorable conditions, and it's long overdue that we gave you a workplace that was safe and inviting and was on par with the level of effort that you're giving to the bureau and the city. Now, the biggest challenge we're going to face is how to fund this. And as everyone in this room knows, we have been asked by the mayor-elect to prepare cut packages of 3 and 5%, and that, depending on the severity of the continuing unfolding economic calamity at the national level, that may be just a preview of where we're headed. But that said, we have a plan over the next couple of years to make sure that our parks are maintained at a level that we've come to expect. And there'll be more about the long-term planning later. But for now, I just want you to know that you have my commitment and the commitment of this council that we will do everything we can to park this plan into the stimulus pipeline. And there's lots of details we worked out in terms of how the stimulus package will be worked out. We learned yesterday that there will be no earmarks. It'll just simply be in the nature of block grants. The president-elect has not yet in a position where he can put his plan into action. But it does seem to me that this is precisely the kind of plan that being shovel-ready would qualify for stimulus dollars. So the council will work to see that it gets in the line. And finally, I just want to acknowledge that the gentleman who testified about the three E's that guide so much of our work around sustainability, where we focus on the environment and the economy and equity. And as the new Parks Commissioner, equity is at the front of the line for me. I believe we live in a wonderful community, and those of us who weren't born here and moved here, I think, are particularly appreciative of what has been accomplished here in Portland. We don't take it for granted. We came here seeking a better life, and we found it in places like Portland. But equity, to me, is the unfinished work of our community. We cannot sincerely say that we live in a great community until everyone, regardless of income and status and geography, enjoys the benefits of a livable community. And I believe equity is our great unfinished task. So I appreciate that the three E's were introduced into our discussion. As your next Parks Commissioner, you have my commitment to see this project forward. I think it's terribly important for all the reasons that have been articulated in the testimony today. And Mayor, I'm proud to vote aye.
Aye. Really? Well, we're just voting on the amendment.
So okay.
Okay. In that case,
I'll vote aye as well.
Although I almost forgot what we were voting on.
we were accepting the master plan. Okay, and please read item 1726.
No, we have to vote on the. We just voted on the amendment, so we need to actually vote. Well,
that's correct.
I was keeping track. Well, Commissioner Fish was very enthusiastic about the amendment he just voted on. I'm equally enthusiastic about the resolution we're voting on and decided to speak to that. He really said a lot of what I think. And Nick and I, in addition to being colleagues, are good friends, and not in the sense that one normally hears politicians refer to as another as their good friend when they're not really sincere about it. We really are good friends, and we kid around a lot, and I kid with him a lot about being a transplant. But his words about appreciating some of the things that Portland has, whereas some of us who were born and raised here take it for granted, are really true. And I didn't know that until probably 20 years ago or so, when I actually first began going to places like Boston and East Coast cities and didn't really have the context, honestly, to understand what it is that Portland is. And it's really been transformational for me to have the opportunity to go and see other cities and appreciate more and more what we have here in Portland. So people that come here, I actually, although I kid them a lot, people that come here to live here, it really says a lot about what Portland is, that we are a magnet for people who appreciate good planning, good services, and good government. And this is an example of that. And, you know, as Nick said, this was born not out of the most pleasant circumstances, but often that's the way things that are really good do start, is with a lot of anxiety and emotion and controversy. And from that came really this wonderful plan, and I really want to acknowledge John Larson's role in this, and it shouldn't be underestimated, the level and clear-headed advocacy he brings for the Mount Tabor neighborhood, which I've always respected and I even respect more now and appreciate, because without that, we wouldn't have the plan that we have today. We wouldn't be in the position to vote on it today as we are. So I want to acknowledge everybody's good work, including Zari Santner, who led this process. It was an exemplary process. I'm not surprised somebody wrote a thesis paper for their master's degree on it. I'm anxious, actually, to read that, because I can always learn something about good public process, as I have in the last 6 years here, and really want to acknowledge everybody's excellent work. I'm excited to do what my part needs to be to actually implement this plan, though. This is the easy part, designing it and voting on it. Now we need to come up with the resources to build it, and I've committed to all parties that I will do whatever is asked of me to help make that happen. Aye.
You know, this has been an interesting process, to say the least. I remember 4 years ago, or 4.5 years ago when I was running, this was a really hot topic in the Mount Tabor neighborhood. And after taking several tours with the neighborhood, I realized some of the things that they were talking about. I really got to hand it to Zari and the folks at Parks. They have put in a lot of hard work to try to create an environment where citizens do have a real role. And I think that kind of participatory democracy is really important to Portlanders. And this is just one more result of that process. Rather than trying to do things quickly or bureaucratically, we have to slow down and listen to what the community has to say and incorporate them, not only their listening, but their decision-making as well. This is a great example. Zari, great job. Thank you, Mount Tabor folks, for being patient with us. It only took 4 years. So perhaps next time we can do it faster. But I really appreciate all the good work and all of the collaboration that's involved in this scale of an event. So I vote aye. 1727.
Affirm management authority for certain city property in the vicinity of Mount Tabor, including the Mount Tabor Yard and the city of
Longmont. This is an ordinance, and as such, we'll move to a second reading next week.
Mayor, may I, for one other
yes.
item, because Commissioner Saltzman is not here, because we may not all be back together next week on the remaining piece, I'd just like to acknowledge a few of the other people who made this day possible, starting with Maya Spencer and David McAllister and Elizabeth Kennedy Wong, Karen Loper and Bob Downing and Kathleen Murin. Zari, for your work, the line staff, Karen Trappin, Gary Johnson, Kim Randolph, John Long, Leslie Pohl Cosbaugh, Lance Condre, and Earl Straley. And again, all the community members who participated, as Randy mentioned, John Larson, Nancy Norby, Dawn Smallman, and all the members of the planning group. You have our gratitude.
Thank you, folks. We're going to move ahead to the 10:15 time certain. When I ran for public office 4 years ago, 4.5, one of the things that the disabilities community told me very clearly is that that the city could do much more to engage our communities with disabilities in the decision-making process. In fact, their motto was, not for us, but with us. And I was very impressed with the tenacity of this group of people and their efforts to try to make the city more aware and inclusive of those kinds of issues. So before we begin, though, I would ask Commissioner Fish would like to add Jackie Mercer to the commission. And in that regard, I would ask for a motion and a second to amend this report.
A motion?
A second.
Call the vote.
Thank you, Mayor. Jackie Mercer is the executive director of NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association. She has a passion for the issues around disability and disability rights, and she has asked to serve on this commission. I'm pleased to move her nomination. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Please proceed, folks.
Well, just by way of introduction, I'm Jeremy Van Kieran with Mayor Potter's office.
I'm Charles McGee of Mayor Potter's office.
And I'm Nicole Schroen. I'm the Disability Program Coordinator in ONI. And I'm going to start off. So in ONI, we have a saying that we like to use, and that is that we're not just bringing people to the table of government, but we're resetting the table so that everyone has a seat. 3 years ago, under Mayor Potter, the disability program endeavored to reopen the lines of engagement between the city and the persons with disability community. A 15-member advisory committee called the Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee, or PCDAC, was established as one way to bring the voices of the community to the elected officials. Over the last 2 years, the PCDAC has been very successful in its relationship to the city, instituting events like the Roland Stroll, which some of you participated in, the Making a Difference Awards, which I'm happy to say everyone attended this year, and as well working with several of the bureaus, notably the Office of Transportation, giving valuable insight on infrastructure projects. Yet some challenges arose over the last 2 years, and we began to question if there might be a way to expand on the good work that we were doing, as well as, you know, tame some of those challenges. And so some of the things that were happening were the committee was very active and took a lot of the time of myself being the disability program. And a lot of community members and community organizations felt like they weren't able to engage with the city as much as they would like to. So that was one of the challenges. Another was that the committee was 15 people, and 15 people clearly could not represent the depth and breadth of cross-disability as well as cross-ethnic, racial, or other social minorities. And we really wanted to bring more people to the table. And finally, the bureaus, seeing the success that PDOT had, or the Bureau of Transportation now, I think it's called, wanted to engage with the committee, and we questioned whether there was a better way for bureaus to engage. And so we came together and decided we needed to go out to the community and ask them what they thought, and that's where Charles is going to take over.
A summary of the study and community engagement activities to expand Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee. In keeping with the City of Portland's commitment to promote participatory governance, Mayor Tom Potter directed a study be conducted to expand Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee in order to be more inclusive, provide equal opportunity, and give a stronger voice to the full range of all persons with disability who live, work, worship, study, travel, and play within the city of Portland. To this end, a citywide survey was conducted by mail and online between October 1st and November 14th, 2008. Second, focus group meetings were held on November 19th and then on December 2nd, 2008. Participants of the study group included a cross-section of the community, key stakeholders, and ADA Title II coordinators from various city bureaus. Third, we consulted with Portland Citizens Disability Advisory Committee, Multnomah Disability Services Advisory Council, Elders in Action, Oregon Commission for the Blind, Office of County Chair Ted Wheeler, Multnomah Aging and Disability Services Division, and Portland Parks and Recreation Disability and Accessibility Advisory Subcommittee, just to name a few. Fourth, a research of best practices was conducted on the state of Hawaii's and other